But we are going to start today by talking about hip replacements. Now, maybe you've heard that some hip replacements have been recalled because it was metal on metal and causing some metal shavings and leading to some serious problems. Well, there's some other information about hip replacements that you may want to talk to your doctor about, and we are going to learn all about that today. My guest is Ilya Syag. He's an attorney with Malyo Christopher Toll here on the Suncoast. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Hi. So refresh our memories. Where do we stand on the metal-on-metal hip replacements? And that is a metal socket. And that is the sort of the ball which replaces the top of the bone that then goes into the socket. Where do we stand on those? Those were recalled and then something happened and what's going on?
Sure. So those were pretty much the bee's knees for a while. The industry really loved metal on metal hips, best thing since sliced bread. At least that's how those were marketed, especially towards younger, more active people, or people that were looking to hopefully get a longer lifespan out of their hip implant. The technology had a lot of promise and was based on some theories that really made orthopedic surgeons hopeful that this could be potentially an implant that somebody could get and maybe would never need to get replaced again. So essentially, what it does is the ball that sits on top of the femur for a metal-on-metal hip implant is typically much larger than a normal hip implant, and that allows, theoretically, for a larger range of motion and a smaller chance that the hip would ever dislocate. And that's a risk that surgeons really try to stay away from. So when these metal-on-metal hips came out and surgeons were told, look, these are larger balls, smaller chance of hit, dislocation, things really sounded good. And the surgeons' concerns about metal rubbing against metal were addressed by telling the surgeons that these would be lubricated in a way, that they wouldn't actually touch, or if they touched the metal components, they wouldn't produce any metal shavings, and if they did, the metal shavings wouldn't have any negative repercussions in the body. So those were used. Early on, it seemed like it was going to work quite well. After a few years, the problems really started coming about, and we saw a number of years ago that one of the most highly used implants was recalled from the United States market, and that was the DePue ASR. There are other hip implants that had problems, and slowly the industry moved away from metal-on-metal hips, and I think you'd have a really hard time finding a surgeon now that uses it. I'm sure it might still be good in certain circumstances, and it'll be up to the surgeon, but they're very rarely used now, if at all.
So the other options are a ceramic ball that is placed into the top of the femur. And basically, everybody, they take the femur bone in the thigh, and they cut off the top of that bone, that little round kind of part. When you think of a doggy bone, you know, has sort of the two bows at the end of the stick. And so they cut off that one top of it called the head. And then they take a ball that with another stick and stick it in, and then that can go into the cup. So the ball is still metal, but sometimes the cup is lined with plastic or ceramic. Is that right?
Correct.
Or do I have it reversed?
No, you have it pretty right. So it's a few major components. There's the stem, and yes, so what they do during the surgery is they'll open you up, they'll dislocate your hip, and your natural hip works as a ball and socket, and a hip replacement mirrors that. So when a surgeon opens you up and dislocates your hip, the surgeon will remove the top of your femoral bone, will in essence drive a metal stem down through your femur, and so now you'll have a metal rod inside your bone, and then attach a ball on top of that stem. And then we'll put a cup inside your acetabulum, your hip bone, and then put the pieces back together. So when you stand up, you now have this ball that articulates, as they call it, inside that socket that they placed in your hip. The materials they use range. The stem can be made of a few different types of metal. Sometimes it's titanium, many times it's titanium. But if they use a metal ball is typically cobalt chrome. The cup that goes in your hip bone is typically cobalt chrome as well. Where the difference comes is, does the cup have a liner inside or not? The liner will keep the ball from articulating against metal. So if there's a liner inside the cup and the liner is made of plastic and the ball is a metal ball, you will have a metal on plastic hip implant.
And then what happens with that? And how long has this been going on that we've had these other materials being used? Is it about 5-6 years or longer?
Well, much longer. Hip implants have been done for quite some time and different technologies have been used. I think most surgeons, the way it's been explained to me is that a hip replacement surgery is one of the greatest advancements in medical science in a century. And so different technologies have been used. Typically, I think the greatest numbers are going to be metal on plastic. And so the industry has attempted to improve the plastic because one of the concerns for some time has been a metal ball moving against a plastic liner will scratch the plastic and there would be plastic shavings that cause a reaction in the body. And so what you saw is the industry improving the plastic so that you could have a stronger plastic that withstands the pressure of being used with a metal ball. So there are much improved components out there. It might be ceramic. It could be a ceramic ball and a ceramic liner.
I'm thinking that something happened 5 or 6 years ago, some big development. I just can't think of it at the moment, but it'll come to me. So you can have these different types of materials, and then if you get those materials, you think, oh, I'm safe. It's okay. But that's not necessarily the case.
Well, with anybody, a whole slew of different things can happen. But what happened here was that the industry decided to try metal on metal hips. This is something that the orthopedic, the medical device industry actually attempted decades ago. And it was very quickly abandoned by orthopedic surgeons around the country because of issues that people had reacting to the metal. Mm-hmm. And so what you saw in the late 90s and early 2000s was that the companies decided to try it again, thinking they could fix the issues that occurred previously. And the devices were put onto the market through a regulatory process with the FDA that many people don't understand. And that allowed these products to get onto the market really without any testing for safety or effectiveness. And that should really drop some jaws, that there's a regulatory process through the FDA that doesn't require testing for safety or effectiveness.
Well, there are a lot of things that should be questioned there. I mean, just supplements alone. First, if you want to market a supplement, you market it, it goes on the shelves, and then the FDA comes in only if there are problems. You know, so that alone, I think, is kind of scary. So a lot of different things. All right, but so for a number of years, something has been going on with metal-on-metal hips. There have been shavings. There have been people who are having these hips removed and getting different types of hip replacements. But there is a new development, if you will, about metal hip implants, because it's not just the recalled hips that are problematic.
Yeah, and I think it's important for your listeners to make sure they talk to their doctor. It's concerning sometimes when there's a reliance on only if the product is recalled that there would be a potential problem with the product. And I think it would be there's information out there about products that aren't recalled that I think would be beneficial for doctors and surgeons to look at to make sure they understand the entire universe of information available about a product. I think it's just a little bit of a narrow perspective to look at just whether the product is recalled or not.
All right. Well, we want to find out some of those things, and maybe you can tell us in just a minute. But first, we're going to take a quick break. Everybody, we'll continue with attorney Ilias Syag from MCTLawyers.com, MCTLawyers.com, which is Mayo, Christopher, and Tall. You are listening to Health Check with Heidi Godman on WSRQ. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Check. I'm Heidi Godman. If you are just joining us, my guest today is attorney Ilias Syag. He is an attorney with Mayo, Christopher, and Toll here on the Suncoast. You can check him out at mctlawyers.com. We're talking about hip replacements, and you've probably heard about the metal-on-metal hip replacement thing. And, you know, there have been other types of materials that are used, but a number of people still have metal-on-metal hip replacements, and some people had them removed and had others put in. Some people still have metal on metal in there. And Ilias, tell us about the health risks they might one day face.
Sure. So, and I think it's important for people to understand that just because you might have a metal-on-metal hip in your body right now doesn't mean something bad is going to happen. We're talking simply about devices that have a higher rate of problems, not that they have a 100% rate of problems happening. But when you're looking at medical devices, you don't want to see a medical device that's having more than, for example, a 0.5% of them fail per year. When you start getting above that number, you're getting into a number that really is unacceptable as far as what the risk is. So when I'm talking about potential problems with metal-on-metal hips, I really don't want everyone listening to get concerned that just because they have one, they're guaranteed to have a problem.
But they should watch out for certain things that could potentially happen. And what are those things? There could be shavings from the metal grinding against the other metal. And what can that lead to?
Sure. So what happens is either because the metal ball is rubbing against the metal socket, or potentially because there might be a problem on the back end of the ball where it connects to the stem, there might be metal that's released into the body. And there's different types of reactions. If the metal release is confined to just the hip joint, then right around the hip joint, there could be bone death. There could be tissue death. You could see problems with the tendons around the hip joint. So there's a lot of inflammatory response that occurs with the body. The body is going to try to protect from the metal the metal particles, and so there's a big inflammatory response, and then there's a that will create problems on its own because the body realizes there's a foreign substance in there and is trying to clear it out. But again, that might result in bone death. If there's bone death, potentially it might loosen the implant.
Do you have to get some blood work done every once in a while to make sure you aren't going through these problems?
It's very helpful to get, if you have a metal-on-metal hip implant, it's very helpful to get blood tests, and your doctor is the one that's really going to be able to tell you whether it's correct for you or not. But we look at blood levels for cobalt and chromium. That's somewhat of a sign of whether something is wrong. In and of itself, it may not be enough to let your doctor know whether something is wrong or not. But usually the doctors look at a combination of factors. Are your metal levels high? Are you having symptoms? And are there any noises, for example? Sometimes people experience some noises, or they can feel a grinding.
Sure.
So the doctor will take all of that into consideration, and we'll have a discussion on whether the doctor believes a surgery to remove the implant is correct. Is the right form of treatment, and maybe it's not, but I think it's important that if you have a metal-on-metal hip, that you are assertive in your treatment, because one of the things we've seen with the medical literature that's out there is that you could be asymptomatic, you're not feeling any pain, but there's a reaction going on in your hip, and by the time you feel pain, there might be quite a bit of damage that's already done.
Okay, so what should you talk to your doctor about? What information do you need to bring to your doctor? In our last segment, you were saying there's some info about implants that have not been recalled. So maybe there are people walking around with these implants that haven't been recalled, and they're feeling a certain sense of security, but you want to let them know you might want to take a look at this document.
Absolutely. So one of the products that we litigate is actually a product that has not been recalled in the United States. It's made by a company called Biomet, and it's their M2A Magnum and its predecessor device, the M2A 38. And those products are not recalled in the United States. But interestingly enough, the M2A Magnum and the 38 are recalled in Australia for having higher than expected revision rates, which means it's having to be replaced more often than is acceptable.
How do you find out about this? Is there some document you can look at?
Sure. So actually, the recall notice in Australia is publicly available. And I think if you have one of these implants, I think it behooves your listeners just to make sure that their surgeon is aware of this. Mm-hmm. So it can be a part of the surgeon's analysis on treatment that, okay, it might not be recalled here, but it's recalled somewhere else, and how should that play into my treatment and diagnosis of this person? And that's why I was saying earlier, I think it's a bit too narrow to think about, is it recalled here or not? Because especially Australia has a very robust set of data analysis. 100% of the surgeries that occur in Australia with medical devices, and particularly joint replacements, Australia is able to keep track of those. So when it goes in, they know. When it comes out, they know. And being able to keep track of that information, they're very good at keeping track of when a problem potentially arises with an implant. And as a result of the data that they were able to collect on the Biomet products, they recalled the Biomet Metal on Metal Hip implant in February of 2016. And what's interesting about that recall of the Biomet product is that it was recalled because it had higher than anticipated revision rates. Now, if we go back in time, in 2009, the Australian government recalled the Depew ASR because it had higher than anticipated revision rates. Less than a year later, the United States government, through the FDA, recalled the Depew ASR because it had higher than anticipated revision rates. We're seeing the same language now with the Biomet Magnum, but we're now a few years ahead, but we haven't seen the FDA take action on the Biomet products.
What should you do? I mean, if you should find out who made your hip, for one thing. You should find information so you could find a recall notice and Google recall notices on hip replacements here in our country and in other countries too. But what else could you do?
I think it's always important to stay informed. And I think the surgeons that we have, even in this area, we have some great orthopedic surgeons, but nothing is a good substitute for you yourself to be informed. So definitely Google it. First, you find out what implant you have. You can contact your doctor and ask for your implant record. And that's basically a one-page sheet that's in your medical records that shows what was implanted in you. And then research that product. Figure out if there are any complaints. The FDA has a database. It's not as robust as Australia's, but you can check if there are complaints there. You can check for recalls. And again, don't look for recalls just in this country. We don't have the best system of keeping track of these implants in this country. Definitely look at Australia's Joint Registry has a really great website with a lot of data on it, and you can look for your implant there to see how it's doing in Australia. And again, with them being able to keep track of 100% of the surgeries, the information they're able to offer on the outcomes is unparalleled.
Any other documents you would recommend?
Well, there are certainly, first there's the recall notice. If you have the Biomet, there's the 2015 recall notice from the Australian TGA. That's their equivalent of the FDA here. There's also a field safety notice from the United Kingdom and a few European Union countries on the Biomet M2A38. And that's actually the predecessor device to the M2A Magnum. And why is that important? Well, even if you have a Magnum but not the 38, the Magnum was sold in the United States, allowed to be sold in the United States, because it's supposedly substantially equivalent to the 38. So if there's a safety hazard alert in the European Union for the Biomet M2A38, and you have the Magnum, and the Magnum is substantially equivalent to the 38, that should be something your surgeon also takes into consideration in your treatment.
Elias, what would someone on the other side of this issue say? How would that person respond to what you're saying right now?
Someone that works for the manufacturer?
Right.
I think they would disagree, and this is a very heated litigation. They disagree that there's anything wrong with the product, and we wholeheartedly disagree with that, and our litigation will hopefully come to the truth on that. But I think more important right now is that the listeners have the information they need to help their surgeon understand how to treat them more effectively. And my biggest concern is that I don't think the surgeons were provided all of the information that they should have been about these products. And my experience has been that most surgeons were never told by these companies if there has been a problem outside of the United States.
Are there links to these documents on your website?
If they visit our website, we have some of these documents available. But certainly if they want to contact us, our contact information is available on our website at mctlawyers.com. We're more than happy to talk to anybody who has any concerns. But first of all, the most important thing, obviously, is to make sure your doctor is taking good care of you and help your doctor do that by being more informed.
And hopefully you won't have any problems.
Hopefully. And again, I want to make sure people understand these aren't defective because 100% of the people have problems. These are defective because a higher percentage of people have problems than they should.
So it's not everybody, but you do have people calling you every day.
Correct. Yeah, it's not everybody, and it's probably not even a majority of the people that have the implants. But that's not the standard that's used with medical devices or anything like that. If you're going to put a device out there, and this is my personal belief, if you're going to put something out there that's going in a human body, you better have tested for safety and effectiveness and know that that thing is safe. And if it's not, you got to be held accountable for that.
All right. Attorney Ilya Sayegh, thank you so much for being on the program. And we really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Ilya Sayegh from